Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too.
Hello, podcast listeners. This is the Hugh James podcast into all issues arising in the sexual abuse realm. I'm a lawyer in the sexual abuse team here at Hugh James, Sam Barker, and I'm here with the partner who heads up the abuse team here at Hugh James, Alan Collins.
Hello, everybody. Thanks, Sam, for the intro.
No problem. So today we're here to discuss an issue that's arisen in the media quite a bit over the last week, which is essentially issues arising in relation to criminal cases whereby the police and also the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, are seeking disclosure of people's mobile phones, particularly the complainant's mobile phone, i.e. the victim of the crime. And this has become something that's been reported a lot over the past few days, and we've seen some quite sensationalist headlines such as "Give us your phone or we'll drop the case," which in our view doesn't quite capture the issue, and therefore we thought we would have a chat about it today so the listeners can have a bit more information. And the best way to do this and the best way to illustrate this issue in practice is to highlight two quite significant and high profile cases in the last year where this issue has arisen and two opposite results have transpired. So the first of those is the case of Liam Allen, which was a case last year. Liam Allen was charged with and faced being convicted of rape. Disclosure of text messages from the accuser's phone suggested that the sexual offences she complained of were arguably consensual. So the listeners might not know, I'm sure many people would, that consent is obviously a defence to, or you don't make out rape if there is consent. So that's why the text messages were relevant, because they painted messages of a very different picture than what the prosecution had alleged. So he was acquitted. And then recently, last week, we saw the case of Alex Hepburn, an Australian cricketer playing in Worcestershire. God.
Worcestershire.
Now I'm showing the fact that I'm Australian here. So,
I think you've been to Worcestershire, actually.
I wouldn't be surprised. Been all over the place. Just can't pronounce it. Now, he's been convicted of rape. And basically, what had happened there was he had set up, amongst these other cricketers that he was, in a team with, had set up a game on WhatsApp on his phone. It was basically a sexual conquest game, who can sleep with the most women. Obviously, this was quite relevant to the case, and that assisted in the prosecution proving that the rape had indeed occurred and he was convicted. So the relevance of these two cases essentially go to consent and also social media and electronic information used as evidence. So I thought we would speak to Alan firstly about both consent and social media and their role in criminal prosecutions today. So Alan, did you want to speak about that?
Well, first of all, consent is clearly a big issue. Consent was obviously an issue in these two cases, the Alex Hepburn case, the cricketer case, and then the case of Liam Allen, who was acquitted of rape. Consent is a defence. And we have to remember that the vast majority of sexual abuse allegations arise from situations where there are only two witnesses, the complainant and the alleged attacker, the alleged guilty party or guilty party if the case is proved. So very often there is a consent issue, the victim complaining that he or she did not consent to what took place, and the alleged perpetrator saying, well, she did consent. So consent is a big issue. There is a general feeling that consent isn't really understood. So to start off with, let's remind ourselves what consent is. It's legally defined. It's defined in Section 74 of the Sexual Offences Act 2003. And that basically says that if someone consents to vaginal, anal or oral penetration, only if he or she agrees by choice to that penetration, has the freedom and capacity to make that choice. consent to sexual activity may be given to one sort of sexual activity, but not another. So, for example, vaginal but not anal sex or penetration with conditions, such as, for example, wearing a condom. Consent can be withdrawn at any time during sexual activity and each time activity occurs. So great care has to be taken when looking at these cases to see what the issue is in relation to consent. Did the complainant not consent to any sexual activity, or did the complainant consent to some form of sexual activity but not to other forms of activity? And I think we have to appreciate that in this very modern world of ours, that people's behaviour and expectations have changed, attitudes evolve all the time, and we also have to recognise that many people, and increasingly, communicate by means of electronic media, whether it's through social media or by sending a text on their iPhone or mobile phone and so on. A lot of communication these days is by text messaging and so on. And so that invariably creeps into these issues of, well, what was the nature of the communication between the two people involved? What was the nature of their relationship? What were they saying to each other, if anything? What was the nature of the messages between them in the prelude to whatever took place and in the aftermath and so on? So you can understand why, as in these two cases of Alex Hepburn and Liam Allen, there was considerable interest in the communications between the various people involved, and also in the case of Alex Hepburn, of course, as regards what he was doing on WhatsApp.
Yeah, and Alan, I think a lot of people might think of this issue as kind of a one-sided issue in terms of, okay, well, they're going to take the phone of the person who's been abused, and that's a major invasion of privacy, etc. And these two cases, would you not agree, show how it can go both ways, how it's required for both obtaining a conviction or disproving a conviction?
Very much so. So in the case of Liam Allen, the text messages were obviously seen as crucial. It resulted in the case collapsing. Now, one appreciates that there are those who think, well, that was wrong, but we have to look at it all objectively. You know, the text messages were crucial in that case because they painted a completely different picture to the one that had been given as part of the prosecution. So the prosecution was saying one thing, but the text messages undermined that.
Yeah.
And of course, that resulted in the acquittal. But we also see, of course, that, as in the case of Hepburn, the picture that he was painting of himself was undermined, as I see it, by his behaviour on WhatsApp. And this was referred to by the judge when he was sentencing Hepburn. You know, Hepburn was behaving in a totally reprehensible way. He was, you know, he was seen as having treated his victim as a piece of meat. I think that's how it was described.
Yeah.
And of course, that ties in with his behaviour on WhatsApp with this so-called sexual conquest game that he and his mates were engaging in. You know, basically, how many women they could, well, to put it crudely, bed. I think that's the way it was being put.
Yeah.
So that painted a very different picture to the one that Hepburn wanted to paint of himself.
Yeah, exactly. Really good points there. And I think also something else that's of note and the listeners might be interested in is that, again, we're going back to the sensationalist headlines that are out there, which say something, you know, that must give over the phone or the case doesn't go ahead. Now, what people have to realise is that evidence in a criminal trial is only it's admissible on the basis that it's relevant. You don't bring in evidence that's irrelevant to the case. But what we're seeing here is that there is that balance between the invasion of privacy of the phone just being handed over and the police having to look at it and, you know, a potential miscarriage of justice. And so we have to look at those issues because obviously they're both very important. One, miscarriage of justice. This is something that is obviously extremely, extremely important in our legal system. It's a cornerstone of the legal system that innocent people should not be convicted of crimes and have their day in court and, you know, innocent until proven guilty. So we're looking at something here that's been around for many, many years. This has formed, as I said, the cornerstone of our legal system. And then a very modern issue, which is, and something that's come up a lot more recently, is this idea of privacy, and particularly a victim's right to privacy. Alan, with those two competing concerns in mind, which are obviously very important, what have the CPS said about how they're going to deal with this going forward?
Well, the CPS have made it quite clear in their recent publication on this issue that they have to proceed in a way that's fair to both complainant and the suspect, and that all reasonable lines of inquiry must be pursued. That's not new, and the policy there has not changed. Mobile phones, mobile devices will not be needed in every case, but when they are, there's clear guidance that only material relevant to a particular offence may be pursued to minimise unnecessary intrusion. So it is understood and appreciated about the intrusive nature of the inquiry. And the policy applies to all offences, not restricted to allegations of sexual offending. But of course, it's sexual offending that we are talking about, and that is what has generated the sort of controversy, which I personally feel is misplaced, because there's a misunderstanding. We have to understand that law and policy has to reflect modern life, and the necessary steps have to be taken to ensure that evidence is secured to assist in the conviction of sex offenders. As we were talking about earlier on, the vast majority of offences are committed behind closed doors, so invariably there aren't any witnesses other than the complainant and the alleged abuser. And so the police and prosecution are dependent on other sources of evidence, for example, medical evidence, and that lies in the form of electronic communications, in other words, text messages, WhatsApp messages, and so on. So it all has to be looked at in the balance, and all those involved have to appreciate that these communications can help prove guilt, or on the other hand, could help prove innocence. And that, I think, should not be controversial. I think everyone recognises that having your phone looked at is intrusive, but in these serious cases, that intrusion is probably going to be justified.
That's right. So we're playing with really high stakes here. Because on one hand, we've got this invasion of privacy issue, but on the other hand, we have deprivation of liberty. If somebody's unjustly put into prison, that is something that should be avoided, and there should be steps to be taken at every, cautions taken at every step to make sure that doesn't occur.
And of course, in olden days, pre-text messaging and so on, people's letters would be taken and perused. So, in the olden days of pen and paper and so on, people would write to each other and so on, and those letters would be explored in the courtroom. So where we are in 2019 is literally a reflection of modern life. People communicate, talk to each other, not just verbally, but very, very often by text messaging.
Exactly. So this isn't something that's necessarily new, but I think what's given life to a lot of these issues, right, today at least, and also over the last year, have been issues in relation to funding of the CPS and also of legal representation, legal aid, things like that, because we've seen big issues in disclosure in the past year, and people, the CPS not disclosing certain documents, etc., etc. So there's been whistleblowing in relation to this, and I think that this issue largely arises out of that. Problems with disclosure are essentially reflective of there not being enough people to do the job or do the job properly. So, look, I think that it's an interesting issue, and one that does need to be talked about.
And I think it's going to evolve, because I'm, just thinking this through, people are sort of encouraged in a way to be expressive of their feelings, desires, thoughts, and so on in using electronic communications. Just think of the emoji symbols. That's an expanding range of symbols that people can access and use to express thoughts, feelings, desires, and so on. So I think we'll find over the coming years, this will become even more of a fact of life, that the way that we communicate with each other in these new forms of communication will become increasingly new sources of evidence.
Absolutely. So, look, everybody, thanks for listening today. We do, of course, encourage people to get in touch with us and ask questions, pose topics for Alan and I to talk about. So please do feel free to send through any thoughts, feelings, questions, suggestions, whatever, and we'll be happy to respond or speak about on the podcast. So thank you, and thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, listeners.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.